on this episode of Still Loading. How many times have you heard that damn song? But that brings us to our topic today. The role of music in video games.
God, I love game music.
Oh, yes. I honestly, at work, I will listen to game music more than any other type of music. Because it's just so relaxing. Good. It's like, it can be energetic. Like, I'll be coding and then all of a sudden I'll put on, like, the Chrono Trigger's Chrono's main theme.
I love the Quarters of Time from Chrono Trigger. Oh, yeah. Dude. But, yeah, so Justin is back, guys. It's Josh. Justin, today, as you heard him say, we are talking about video game music. So, Justin, what did you want to start off with?
So, I'm going to kind of go in chronological order here. I think it'll make it a little bit more of a smoother transition.
Yeah, I agree. And we're also talking, instead of, like, this is our favorite game music, and we could... Actually, that'll be for next week's episode. It'll be a mini episode next week. We'll just talk about, like, what... We'll pick one game, and we'll talk about why it was our favorite soundtrack from that game. So that'll
be no mind.
That's next. Chrono Trigger?
Yes. Spoiler. All right.
Spoiler for him. Mine's a mystery. But, all right, so we're going to talk about it chronologically, yes, but we're also going to talk about the role it had and how it affected the gameplay. Not necessarily... Like, yes, we're going to talk about how much we like it, but we're going to focus specifically on what role it had for the game.
Or what negative role it had on the game.
Yes.
But, yeah,
it can make or break it.
Exactly. And so, to start chronologically, we'll go all the way back to Atari.
Bleep, bloop, bleep.
Yeah, to be honest, Atari didn't really have the technological power to house game music. It was mainly just sound effects.
It might have had a jingle here and there.
Yeah, or I think like one of the advanced games, like B-52 Bomber, had a small voiceover. Probably took up all the memory on the cartridge to
A lot of it was just like a voice module. Like, even, what is it? Was it the Coleco or Intellivision? I can't remember. They actually had something where you could speak into it.
Yeah.
And, like, it had a box that would... You didn't speak into it. It had a box that would have voices coming out of it, but it was really, really grainy.
But I know this one game, it would just say at the beginning of the game, it would just be like, B-52 Bomber. It was like, whoa, what is that?
Or what about Bayou Billy?
Bayou Billy.
That was the Nintendo.
I know, but that's the only one I can remember, because I didn't play the Atari that often.
So looking back on Atari and ColecoVision, those systems, really all you had to rely on was the sound effects. And they served their purpose, but it wasn't really until the Nintendo came along that it started to pave the way for music and video games.
Yeah, and like the Nintendo, I would say, kind of started the trend of music to immerse you in a game. Like that, it wasn't just the fact that it had good music, it was the fact that the music could make you feel more attached to it.
Exactly.
Because it links it to you more. It mentally, you remember a game better from not only just the gameplay, but you'll hear a song from a game and you'll remember what you did in the game when playing it.
Exactly.
Nostalgia-based, yep. Almost.
I mean, how many of you are hearing what we played at the beginning, Super Mario Brothers?
And you think of the first level, like that.
Exactly. It just comes right back to you. And, you know, the Nintendo, again, it was technologically limited. It only had room for four channels, and one of those channels was...
A drum, generally.
Yeah, like the triangle or noise channel.
And then you would have the three for a chord. That was about it.
Exactly. But the thing about that, though, is it made composers really focus on the melody of what they were trying to demonstrate. So you would have all these really catchy melodies that you might say games today don't have, but... I'll discuss that later on.
No, it's really sad. But just thinking about that, some games, and they're Castlevania 3, mm-hmm. I forget what the sub the thing, because, you know, Castlevania 2, Simon's Quest. That's it, Dracula's Curse. Now, I heard this, this is a plug for another, a podcast I'm a fan of. I love the Retronauts, but I heard this from them, and they're well informed. The Castlevania 3 in Japan had an extra sound card built in, so it had an extra channel that it could go to.
Yep.
They didn't do it for the American release, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know the reason either. I honestly, though, I've listened to both because, again, at work, I'll just
they did
turn
a good
the
job.
Soundtracks.
They did a good job. Sorry, I got a little louder. I have a soda, and I was leaning closer to put it down. Finish,
yes.
Justin.
No, I would listen to both soundtracks at work, cause, you know, just bored and just threw them up, but I actually prefer the American version better.
Really?
I think the extra sound chip they're trying a little too much. It's cool to listen to. I'll give it that. Like, it's a...
Well,
it
was
sounds
it was ambitious, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But I actually prefer the simplicity of the American version. But again, it goes back to really forcing the composers. And generally, video game companies would need to hire a sound engineer because the composer knew the musical aspect of it, but they didn't know how to translate their composition into the game. So a lot of companies needed a sound engineer to actually bridge that gap. And there were times where, you know, maybe an indie developer at the time or like a small company couldn't really afford those resources. And most notably on the Nintendo, they had to resort to cutting out a composer, so they would resort to public domain music. And this is an example of music not fitting a game whatsoever and actually taking you out of the world. There was
unimmersing you.
Exactly. There was I can't remember for the life of me what the game's actually called.
You were trying to find it. What it was like, Cosmic something?
Is
that what how you remembered it anyway?
Yeah, I can't quite remember. Basically, the gist of the game is that you're some astronaut exploring alien worlds, and in the game, you're just shooting aliens. That's the whole premise. You know, classic,
a
like,
shmup.
Space
shoot 'em
shooter.
Up, a
yeah.
Shmup.
But it's one of those games that uses public domain music, and they chose, I'm going to say, probably both Bach and Mozart.
Mozart, yeah.
And it's like, you're going around shooting aliens to Bach.
It's the most un-badass sounding thing.
Exactly,
you could,
like, oh yeah, I'm shooting aliens.
I mean, maybe depending on the song they chose, too. I mean, I know they had some pretty, you know, like, heavy, like, more, like, darker sounding songs, but, like, I don't know how dark you could make a classical music sound on an NES without having a full orchestra to
accompany
it. Exactly,
like, it's a Vivaldi's Four Seasons playing in the background as you're shooting aliens.
Vivaldi's?
Like, yeah,
Vivaldi's.
I'm so bad with names. But, yeah, so it's like, come on, like, it probably, I remember the gameplay's decent, it's nothing extraordinary, but the music just kind of kills the game because you can't really immerse yourself in it. It's like, what am I doing?
And then, like, we, like, on the other end of the spectrum, like, I see that you have what you want to discuss next was games that have music that do immerse you further. And
oh, yes.
The best example that we'll ever give, besides Mario, which everyone already knows, but
oh, yeah.
The best example, in my opinion, is Mega Man.
Yes.
And
absolutely.
Like,
yes.
Mega Man is famous for its music for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the fact that it's good, it's the fact that it works well with each level. Each level has a different theme. And on top of that, you have a different theme for the boss, a different theme for, like, the menus. So they did lots of stuff just to kind of break the monotony of running to the right and shooting.
Yep.
Or running to the left, depending on which screen you're on. Some screens,
or down, or
whatever.
Up.
Wherever it made you go. But just to break the monotony of it.
Oh, yeah. I remember so many times that I would just love beating a boss in a Mega Man game just to listen to the "You Got a Weapon" music,
no,
stuff like that. I mean, it was different for each game, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know which music you're thinking of, like, when you just beat a boss, yeah. And, like, before you teleport out.
Yeah.
But right after that, like, when you... It's like, you got weapon, blah, 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 like... I can't think of what, like, Bubble Shot or something, yeah. Or Metal Blade, like...
From 2, yeah.
I was just like, this music's so awesome. I would always get so angry that it was so short. I'm like, no, play longer. But... I mean, Mega Man and most platformers of those days were just so good at making sure the music changed to fit the mood. Like, you knew exactly when you got to a boss because the music completely changed. It got a lot more intense. You're like, oh yeah, this is a boss. And even, some of the better games would make sure the final boss had its own track to it. So you knew for a fact
that was the final boss. This is going down. Yeah. I would even argue that one of the earliest uses of game music to not just build immersion, but to kind of signal things. Like, an example of a modern game that does this, because I'm really bad at finding a term to describe it, is BioShock Infinite, where, like, as soon as you enter a battle, and, like, it's not like a game where, like, it takes out immersion. You start getting shot. As soon as you start getting shot or you start shooting at someone, all of a sudden this chaotic string, like, section just comes in, and it's, like, really, right. It's really intense, and you feel it. Like, and as soon as it's done, it kind of goes, like, and just kind of, yeah. like, whisks itself out. That's not something that you'd want to listen to outside of the game, because it's chaos. It's right. There's no melody. Maybe a melody, but not a very good one, if that.
Yeah.
But it's not really much of a melody. It's just pure chaos.
Mm-hmm.
An example of a game that did this way back in the NES. Now, granted, the song is still memorable, I would say, is Final Fantasy.
Oh, yes.
Because the Final Fantasy, we all know the battle theme, and I haven't played much of the first one. You played more of it than I have, assuming. Yes. The battle theme music is there, right? It is different from the overworld, right?
Definitely.
Yeah, that's what I figured. I've played it a long time ago, and I barely remember it. And like I've said before on this podcast, I didn't grow up with the NES, so it's hard for me to remember something like that. But like, even with that, where you would have an overworld theme, and you go to a battle, all of a sudden the music changed because it signified a battle. Now, it did break the immersion a little bit because it was a random battle, so you would kind of go, like, into it.
Yeah.
And, heck, even Pokemon did that. Like, yep. Pokemon is something I did grow up on and know very well. Pokemon did that.
Oh, yes.
But like I said, there is an immersion-breaking moment when you have the... like that little bit of a second of silence or whatever sound effect they choose to put in to signify you found a random fight.
Right. I would say Pokemon got a pass with that, though, because especially the first time you play it, you go through, whenever you see the screen go black and the, like, real chaotic music for a second before it goes into the legendary battle theme, the first thing in your head was, what Pokemon is this? Is it going to be a rare Pokemon?
It did it so well, because wasn't even, like, it. In that case, I don't even think it broke the immersion. It was like the BioShock thing. All of a sudden, something happens. It comes at you out of nowhere. And on top of that, the really high thing, it goes right into the battle music. Exactly. It's not... dun, dun, dun. It goes right into it. It's perfect like that.
And it actually, I would say it did the opposite, because you would kind of start to get bored traveling and things like that. So when you heard that music and you were in a different area, it brought you right back into the game, because you're like, yeah, I want to catch this Pokemon.
I want to see what this one is.
Yeah, I remember when I played, I guess it was Red that had Pikachu in the Viridian Forest.
Mm-hmm.
The first time...
That's one of the most fun things to find out, because it was not the easiest thing to find when you're younger.
Yeah, it was one of the rarer Pokemon. So if you spent some time in there and you actually found a Pikachu, granted, that was admittedly one of my favorite Pokemon, I'd be like, yeah!
Even if you knew what the Pokemon was, too, like when you find the legendary ones in Red and Blue, like Articuno and Moltres, etc., and Zapdos, you could, it wasn't a random fight, you saw them.
Right.
And just that music alone, you're like, we're doing this. Like, it almost got you pumped up.
Exactly.
And to bring it back to the NES, because I know that came out in the mid to late 90s, yeah, so we jumped up about a decade.
Still in the same area, though. The Game Boy, again, yeah, had only four channels to work with.
That's true, that's true. It did. So, well, there we go, actually. Yeah. I forgot the Game Boy was just a mini NES. So, yeah, it's amazing what they were able to do with the technology they had.
Absolutely, and yeah.
Mega Man is a good example. Like Justin said before, there are some games that you have bad examples. We couldn't remember the name of the one, but we used public domain music. Yeah. What's a game that you remember that just had horrible music?
I'm trying to think, and I can't think of one off the top of my head, but I would say most of the times it's because the great games had such memorable music that to me I don't even remember, like, games that had bad or even mediocre music.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Yeah, I really can't think of any off the top of my head. Do you have any in mind?
Since I didn't grow up with the NES, no. But, well, I mean, some of the games, if you want to think about just a bad game that I can't, Circus Caper.
Yeah, that's
that
true.
That game was, I don't like that game.
Controls were bad, music was bad.
Controls were hard. The cover, yeah, the cover on the cover's
creepy.
Was awesome, because it was so, that's why I bought it, like a year or two ago, because I'm like, why does this guy have this creepy mustache? He has testicles on his forehead, too. This
Done.
Is the weird, I need to see what's in this game, and it's just boring, but in any case, so we should move on to the next generation of gaming that had better sound. Oh, we have the Super Nintendo and Sega Genesis.
Which I think, personally, is where some of the best music came from.
Oh, yes.
Because, again, yeah, it had, I think at that point, it had, I'm going to say, at least 8 channels. I don't know if it was 16 or not. Correct me
if I'm wrong. I have no idea. Like, well, you might be thinking 16 because of 16-bit,
right.
But, like,
I think it was 8 channels. But, yeah.
You can correct us in the comments.
Yeah,
let
absolutely.
Us know. It'll help us.
I should have researched it, but, you know, we're getting to the point where, you know, Nintendo, Sega, they realized the importance of having really good music in their games to set the mood. And Josh, you're actually telling me this earlier today, that Sony developed the chip, the sound chip for
I'm
the Super
sure
Nintendo.
I'm pretty sure they did,
yeah. When I think about it, I'm pretty sure that's right, too. I was going to say Sony or Yamaha.
It was Sony. It definitely wasn't Yamaha. But then it kind of ended up falling through, you know, with the whole PlayStation fiasco when Nintendo kind of dicked them over.
Which is a whole new story for another day.
It's not dealing with music, so we're going to stay out of that one.
But, you know, I think this was the golden age for music simply because...
Or game music.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's music in general, but I hold game music to much higher regard than most other musics, but... Yeah, it's you see it had the more power, the technology behind it, up to 8 channels, maybe even more. They could do a lot more with it. They had a lot more room to add more music, to change music halfway through, a lot more mm-hmm. effects. And so you really see sound engineers and composers getting really creative. And you know, it's cool to listen to the different sound chips between the Genesis and Sega. I would say
the Genesis and Super Nintendo?
Yeah, jeez. I was thinking Sega Genesis and then Super Nintendo. They started with SS. Come on.
You're fine. Go on.
But the Genesis had a lot more bassy sound, like, in your face.
It did have, from the things I have heard, it did have a technologically inferior sound chip.
Yeah.
But... like we said, that doesn't mean it's a limitation. A limitation is only what the composer can do with it.
Right, and it's kind of funny because Sega's kind of been known to be ahead of its time, like with the Dreamcast. And if you think about just on the music side, the Genesis had the sound chip for the 90s decade. Like, when I think of 90s music...
It had a really good bass sound.
Yeah.
It had a very metal-y,
like synthesized...
Almost metal, like heavy metal bass almost.
Yeah, like synthesized, like real 90s sounding music to it. And that's...
I still think that the my favorite song from one of my favorite songs from any game. And this is not my favorite game soundtrack, but it's a damn good one. The Sonic 2 one.
Chemical Plant.
Chemical Plant. Oh my god! I could listen to that song on repeat for hours. Like, it's got such a good like driving bass line, and the thing is, the bass drives that song, and that is like the perfect song for a Sonic game. That is, in my opinion, the perfect song for a Sonic game because it's driving. Like, it's not just that it has a fast tempo,
mm-hmm.
but the fact that the beat on it just makes you want to go. Like, it's one thing to have a fast tempo, it's another thing to have a driving beat, and that game has a driving beat. It makes you want to be like, I'm going to get through this as fast as freaking possible, because this song just like
it matched the game and the gameplay perfectly. Like, mm-hmm. it was very driving, and Sonic's a fast-paced game. Like, that's what they really wanted to demonstrate with the Sega, that, you know, Mario's slow, Sonic's super fast, and it's really intense. So they got the music to go with it.
And on the other end, from, like, the Super Nintendo, just thinking of things that match the music of the games, Square RPGs in general, people have praised the music from the Square RPGs of the Super Nintendo days to no end, and we are no different.
For good reason.
Like I said before, I love the Corridors of Time from Chrono Trigger. Yes. Even, like, the Final Fantasy theme from Final Fantasy 2/4, mm-hmm. is, like, when you play it, and I can't even remember it now. Like, I get mixed up with the theme of Final Fantasy between the... and then, like, somehow it was 7 because that was the first one I played,
mm-hmm.
and just, I don't know, but, like...
They're all so memorable,
though. Something like that. I probably butchered a lot of that, but that one, like, when I hear that in... I just recently beat Final Fantasy 2, and they play that... I believe that song is played at the end. You can correct me, my memory's horrible with that for some reason, but I loved the music at the end. The game itself was fun. The music wasn't phenomenal with it, but it was still good.
Yeah.
Chrono Trigger had, like, I love the music from Chrono Trigger. I think it's Luca's theme is one, like, what's, you know, in the fair section of the game,
yes.
you fight that boss guy, the robot.
Gato.
Gato's theme, that's
yes.
it. I love his theme
yep.
so freaking much.
I would fight him so many times, not just for the currency you get for the fair, but just to hear him rap. It was the coolest thing.
I played through Chrono Trigger for the first time, what would you say, like 6-7 months ago?
Yeah,
when I borrowed it from you. I could have got... I have it on the DS.
About damn time, too.
I could have played it on the DS, but I wanted to play the original Super Nintendo.
Which was a good choice.
It was a very good choice. And I loved the game, though I am mad that I chose to beat the game in the wrong way, so I can't do a play plus. You have to go... Like, I chose to go through, like, what is it? The end of time section, you know, with, like, the... You can go straight to him from there. I did that. If you actually choose to go through the airship and fight everything to get to the final boss, then you get the new game plus.
Yeah.
And I was like, are you kidding me? Screw this. I beat the game. I don't care anymore.
Well, it has... I don't want to butcher this because it's my favorite game, but I'm going to say 13 different endings?
I thought you told me originally it was 8, but I could be wrong. It could be 13. In any case, that was a cool thing of it. But back to the music. I loved Gato's theme. And, like, the music in those games, they were, with the exception of, like, the battle themes,
mm-hmm.
they weren't meant to, like, make you drive. Because those games, they're time sinks. And not in a bad way, but, like, you're meant to take your time through it to experience the world that the designers created for you. And music just makes it so nice to do that. Like,
exactly.
Chrono Trigger, I think, was one of the... Because I haven't played a lot of Square RPGs from this generation, but I've heard nothing but praises from many of them. So this is... A lot of it is more based on hearsay from my side, but what I have played, I can agree with. With the games I have played, I will agree with them. Because they're very... immersive songs for, like, they make you want to be in that world. And despite the fact that, like, it's just 16-bit images, you can really get an idea of what they were trying to show.
Exactly.
And it makes me want to go there.
Yep. And as we alluded to earlier, we'll probably be talking about Chrono Trigger's music on our next podcast, so I don't want to give too much away now, but I will say
this. You can do all your own research on your favorite tracks and everything.
Exactly. I will say this, though, that to me, don't get me wrong, Chrono Trigger is my favorite game of all time. I could play that day in and day out. But I think, to me personally, the reason why it's such a great game is the music.
Because it makes you, it puts you in that world.
Exactly. I really don't think it would have been as great a game if the music wasn't nearly as superb as
it was. I heard Earthbound had good music, too.
Earthbound does.
I have not played Earthbound yet. I apologize for this gaming sin, but, you know, we all have them. I'm still working on mine.
I'm actually playing through Earthbound currently, so I'm, like, half guilty. But, you know, personally, I think Chrono Trigger's music's better so far. Granted, I haven't played all of Earthbound. But to me, like, hearing Chrono's theme for the first time, I get chills still every time I hear it. I'm like, I feel like I need to go save the world every time I hear it. I'm like, what is this calling? What is this calling me to save this world?
And it's kind of funny. I guess it's a bit of an awkward transition, but we're kind of going to move on to the PlayStation and newer, because the N64 didn't have the capabilities to play sound files. It was still kind of in sound chip type of thing.
It was kind of like in a hybrid type area.
The PlayStation could actually play full
MP3s,
because it was a disc, you know. It was disc based, and games like since we're still on the RPG thing, like Final Fantasy VII, everyone knows has good music. It has very good music. One thing, and I may get crucified for this, I don't like the One Winged Angel theme. I like it, but I don't understand why it's so freaking popular.
Yeah.
Maybe because I played it a couple years after. Like, I played it a couple years after. Instead of 1997 when it came out, I played in, 2000, 2001.
Mm.
Maybe a bit later, 2002. But I just don't understand why people think it's such a grand song. It's good. You really feel the hatred of Sephiroth in it.
Yeah,
it
does, very fitting.
It does what it's supposed to, but I just don't understand why people classify it as such. Like, I'm sure it's written, composed well and everything. I don't mean it like that. I just don't understand how it became such a huge fan favorite.
That is an interesting point, because, you know, boss music generally isn't very brought up in game music world, you know.
No, because even Mega Man, back to when we were talking the NES, it had almost the same boss music for every boss, didn't it?
It was slightly different.
But I don't remember any of the boss. I remember stage music.
Absolutely.
But I
don't remember boss.
So yeah, like you're saying, but sorry, well, let me finish. I'll let you finish what you were saying.
But I would almost agree with you. I do enjoy the One Winged Angel. I love Final Seven soundtrack. But honestly, my favorite versions of it, I'm going to be completely honest, I love the Black Mages.
The version of the battle song from 7, by the Black Mages, was really,
amazing,
really good.
Yeah, they do great music. For those that don't know, the Black Mages, I think they're run by the same composer that did most of Final Fantasy's music. I think
I'm gonna butcher his name. Yeah, I just butchered it now, I'm sure. But you know who, for people who know the games, they know who I'm talking about.
But it's more like a heavy metal band that does all the soundtracks, and they do a great job.
Yeah.
But I honestly skip over the One Winged Angel, and my favorite version is from Mega Ran. Because he puts in the emotion from the music into a really good rap.
I love his Avalanche song, Mega Man's Avalanche. We played it on, back when this podcast was still on SoundCloud, I did edit in a bit of Mega Man's Avalanche. I love that song.
Yeah, we should probably post a link to the One Winged Angel, just so people get an idea.
Think I heard that one.
It's really good. He has a guest with him on that one. Storyville, I'm pretty sure is his name.
Okay.
But he does a great job. He he does the voice of Sephiroth.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We saw that live.
Yes, that's right.
When we went to Too Many Games.
Yes.
That was cool.
But anyway, yeah, get into now where we're talking about PlayStation Beyond. You know, this is kind of, I wouldn't say a huge turning point in game music, but it kind of becomes a different aspect of the game music in general. Like, to me, remembering going to the Nintendo 64 and PlayStation, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater.
That was a great soundtrack.
Yeah, and I'm pretty, I could be completely wrong on this, but to me, that was the first game that used popular band licensed music.
Believe it or not, no.
Really?
Earthbound has Beatles songs in it.
Oh, that's true.
But it wasn't technically licensed.
Yeah,
and they like so they can't really like.
It's very influenced by the Beatles.
The like there's certain section where it is the Beatles, but yeah. Like they just kind of keep that hush hush so Paul McCartney doesn't sue them.
Yeah,
thankfully our podcast isn't well known.
Sorry, Earthbound, but. Yeah, that was the first game I remember playing that had licensed music.
Yes.
And that's how honestly, I wish I discovered Primus before that, but that's how I discovered Primus, because they had Jerry Was a Race Car Driver.
That's all.
And that was the one song I would constantly play when I play Tony Hawk.
I loved the soundtrack for Tony. Like, all the songs they chose for that game were absolutely perfect. Fit the gameplay so well.
And I couldn't imagine them doing, like, their own compositions for that game to match it. Like, you needed, like, 90s grunge music and stuff like that to fit that game. It fit
another
so
game
perfectly.
That kind of, in the same vein, well, this one was, like, I think Half-Life. They got a band to write music for, the Jet Grind Radio, or Jet Set Radio afterwards. Like, that had, like, I didn't grow
Jet
up with
Set Radio!
I didn't grow up with it, so I don't, like, the music's not, like, I don't hate it. Like, I don't think it's bad. In fact, I think it's good. It's just that I don't, like, it's not, I haven't played it enough for it to be ingrained in my memory like it has for the people who grew up with it. And even, moving in even further, like out of licensed music, what's cool that games do now is that they may make music that's not necessarily memorable, but it works with the game so well. Like it's not meant to be a song or a melody. It's meant to just be, well, technically a song, but it's meant to be something to add immersion. Like most notably, it'd be in horror games.
Yeah,
horror games are really well known for maybe just a lot of times they usually have like just strings just kind of going like rust in the background. And it is technically a song because they composed it for it, but it's not something that you would really listen to outside of the game because it would just be couple notes.
Backtracking a little bit, that reminds me, I wanted to just show at. Throw out an honorable mention to the Super Metroid game for the Super Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the first, to me, like sci-fi horror games that the music really
it adds to it.
It creeped me out. Like it was the first like area and like that the Metroid theme playing. You're like, what? It creeps you out.
A game that really got me with the atmosphere was BioShock.
Yeah.
BioShock has some of the best, like, I don't know, like, the music isn't memorable. Like, I know some people love the BioShock theme. I don't remember that at all. But that's just me. But the game itself, just, like, the music in it was just, not just BioShock Infinite, but the original BioShock.
Yeah, the original
BioShock Infinite is more of an action game. BioShock, the original, is a survival horror.
It's,
well, not survival, just a horror.
It's a horror game,
horror action horror game.
And one that I will fully admit, I am such a baby, because I couldn't play through that game, because A, I'm horrible at first-person shooters, and B, it was so gosh damn creepy.
It's so freaking creepy. Like,
and the music doesn't help.
The splicers in that game is what really, and that's not necessarily a song or like music, but like they have really old timey tracks. I don't know the names of the songs, unfortunately, but there'll be like radios playing. You'll hear in the background, and then you'll hear a splicer talking over top of it.
Yep,
and they're just talking about like like how they wish their face could be different or some yeah. really creepy like, dialogue.
Yeah.
And just the combination of that, and you hear like the creaking of the city underwater and yeah. just of Rapture just swaying in the ocean. It
set the mood so well. It's
so well done. Like I can't play games, I can't do horror games generally. BioShock, and I guess this is kind of a knock against it, but it is one of my favorite games. I would put it in my top 10. Mm. Is that, like, after a while, the horror kind of loses its edge, but I loved that.
Yeah.
Some people may not like that if they're big into horror games, but I don't like horror games, but I loved BioShock, because once you get used to it, and you hear, and you, like, you get used to hearing splicers say weird, creepy things, you're like, oh, that's just...
that guy!
It's just that guy, you know, he ain't no thing, he's fine.
I honestly think, for me to play through BioShock, I need, like, all the lights on in my room... Like a well-lit scenario. I cannot play that game in the dark.
It's really not too bad. Once yeah. you get used to it. I think the bigger scary things are just like when, like, big tough enemies come out of nowhere. And you're yeah. like, oh my, that's in with any game. That's like any, even just like a non-scary like
Zelda
game.
Or something.
Yeah, like all of a sudden you have this terrifyingly big, like, enemy and just appear right next to you. You're like, holy shit, where did he come from?
Hit the deck! Speaking of Zelda, actually, the Forest Temple in Ocarina of Time.
That was creepy.
Yeah, while we're on the top of the creepy. Oh, that was creepy. And the hands coming from the ceiling. I hated that temple. But,
same with the Shadow Temple.
Yeah, the Shadow Temple I would put above the Forest Temple in hatred.
But the thing is, the Forest Temple was just... No. Forest Temple, it was a lot of fun. It was a fun temple to play, absolutely. But it was very creepy. What sucked about the Forest Temple is that it was deceptively creepy.
Yeah, because
you're not expecting it to be creepy.
Right, you're like, oh, the Lost Woods, the Forest Temple. Could be there. Yeah.
And Shadow Temple, you know going in.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
The Shadow Temple. It says it in its freaking name. But Forest Temple, like, oh, it's cutie, wootie, and dandy. It's
Sarah, we're saving Sarah.
Saria. I will say one of the first soundtracks I remember that really kind of added to the game was the Medal of Honor games.
Oh.
Medal of Honor.
Well, you were huge in those games, too.
I still, even the newest one, which is not a very good game, I won't lie, but I still love it. It's just, maybe it's a guilty pleasure, maybe it's just me, but by all standards, it's nowhere near as good as the old ones. But Medal of Honor was just like, it did a lot of things for the game industry, not just in terms... It was one of the first games to have a full orchestral soundtrack.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was the first, it might have been, but it was one of the very, very first ones. Mm-hmm. Like, first five or so, somewhere in that range. And it had a really good soundtrack by Michael Giacchino. And he did all the music up until, like, I think, like, Medal of Honor Rising Sun? Definitely Frontline. I don't know if it was Rising Sun, but he did the one for Medal of Honor Underground. He did... Did he do Allied Assault on the PC? I don't remember. I don't remember. No, he didn't do Allied Assault, but he did do Frontline, and I believe he did Rising Sun. So, I love the Medal of Honor games. I'm a huge sucker for them. I really hope they make more, but once they brought the series into the modern age, because that's where everything's at now, World War II shooters may start making a comeback. Who knows?
Yeah.
If they can find something interesting to do with it again.
Right, but,
That game had such a good soundtrack. Like, I would actually listen to that outside of it. Even the songs that were meant to be mood-building as opposed to memorable instead of, like, a theme. It was just the various level songs.
Mm-hmm.
Those were even really good. Because they did build a theme, because they would even put forest sound effects into it, depending on the level. If it was in a city, obviously, they wouldn't do that. But you would have, like, little bit of tree sounds in there. Maybe not, like, crickets or birds, but...
Yeah,
like tree sounds.
Leaves rustling or
exactly.
branches moving.
So it was a really cool soundtrack. So, I don't got much more to talk about this. Do you have anything you still have to add for there?
So, I think the main point I wanted to make with the next-gen consoles and consoles to come, I wouldn't say music has taken a backseat, but...
It definitely hasn't taken a backseat,
but it's more of a, I would say...
That's our roommate, sorry. Well, not sorry, he's awesome.
Yeah.
I think.
You want to join us, Micah? I think he's doing dishes. But,
Like a good...
I'll kill
No, it hasn't really taken a backseat in the idea that it's not thought of as much, but it's taken a backseat in the idea that it's not memorable.
Yeah.
Like, it's not... The only game I can honestly think of in recent memory that had, like, a full orchestral soundtrack that still had a good theme was Halo.
Exactly. And I was going to talk about the Halo theme. That theme is an extremely well-orchestrated composition, and it really set the tone for that game.
Oh, yeah. Even if you're not a Halo fan, like, you have to admit, like, it's one... the one, like, when people hear that song, they know it's from Halo. Exactly. Even if you love it or hate it. That's what it's... A game song is a theme. Not necessarily a song from a game, but a theme is supposed to do.
Right. And I think, you know, music nowadays for games really is...
It's immersion building.
Exactly. It's
anything.
A mood builder. It just sets the scene. We're back in, like, Nintendo and Super Nintendo days. It was really a big part of the game because it had to be. Yeah, they didn't have the graphics to put you in this world. They needed the music to help it.
And not even that, like, if you played a game without the immersion music we have now, it wouldn't be nearly as good. So Nintendo really set the stage for if Nintendo hadn't had good music in their games and just continued the Atari trend, who knows what the game music would be like now.
Right.
If it didn't have at least some people... I shouldn't say Nintendo, because there was third parties. But if Nintendo with Mario, like Koji Kondo and his Legend of Zelda, Mario soundtracks, all the really fantastic ones, if he hadn't set the mood, and on top of that, the people from Capcom, the people from Konami with Castlevania. Castlevania had great music.
Oh, yeah.
If they hadn't taken the time and cared enough to say, hey, we want to have this, like, we want good music in the game. And whether it was the higher-ups who wanted, or even just the composer, like, who tried so hard to make something good, if it hadn't been for them, we wouldn't have the game music we have now. We wouldn't have immersion-building soundtracks. I mean, for crying out loud, we have professional composers. Hans Zimmer and Danny Elfman has done music for games. Yeah. So you can't tell me that game music is bad now. It's just not memorable. That's
right.
The only difference.
And it's used in a different way.
Exactly.
Honestly, like, games now have taken a trend towards almost playing a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the music goes along with that. It's a lot like music in a movie, where it really just sets the scene. It sets the mood. Like, going to Castlevania Lords of Shadow, the music in that game... I can't remember a lot of it, but it was very somber, very, like, mood-building for the fact that you're playing a guy that has seen his wife murdered, and you kind of build up and find out, spoiler alert, that you're the one that killed her. And
I didn't play it yet, Justin.
Sorry.
Oh.
Spoiler.
Oh.
It kind of shows it, like... pretty early on.
All right, I tried playing it. It wasn't my favorite. I'll try it again.
And it's not it's kind of like a climax builder, but I don't know. But anyway, regardless, it's because going through that game, you're carrying that burden on your hands, and the music goes with that. It's very somber through pretty much every area. And of course, you have Patrick Stewart narrating it, which is awesome.
Very majestic voice.
But other than that, like, I would say Square's doing a great job of keeping their music going really well.
The Uncharted series has really good music. Like,
I have not played the Uncharted.
The theme from Uncharted is really memorable. Like, I love that soundtrack.
Nice.
The last game that a note, this may be a contender. I still have to separate the top couple ones for my favorite soundtrack from a game. Journey on the PlayStation 3.
Yeah.
That was the first game to actually get the whole soundtrack got nominated for a Grammy.
Which is crazy.
The only other song, the only other video game piece of music was Baba Yetu from Civilization 4. That won the Grammy.
Right.
I was supposed to, but it was just one song. This was a full album, like an entire soundtrack. But granted, it lost, but it did go up against John Williams. It went up against Trent Reznor.
Yeah.
Like, some really big-time composers for movies.
Right, and it's a shame if you think about it, because you know, I don't think the Grammys really recognized video game music at all.
No.
And
the only reason it even got in is because they changed the specifications of the category.
Exactly.
The video game music is never recognized, and I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, I understand if it loses to other movies. I'm not saying it Journey deserved to win, because I didn't hear the other soundtracks. I can't say that for sure. And I don't know if they chose the other soundtracks because this was from a video game or not. But the fact that it got nominated was impressive enough. And the composer who did it, his name was Austin Wintory. He is just an outstanding composer from everything I've heard. Yeah. He, like, if you have not played Journey 1, it's a short 2-hour game. You can take it out in a night. The soundtrack is one of the best soundtracks in any game I've ever played. It's in the top 5 for my favorite soundtracks. I would say closer to the top 1, wow. 2, or 3. In the top 3, actually.
Nice. I would actually, for me, and this is a new Gen 1 too, is the Final Fantasy 13 series music is actually really good when you listen to it.
If you actually pay attention to it?
Yeah, it's very ambient music. It's like very electronica ambient, but it's got some really good music in there, and it's somewhat
does it build there. Does it help build with the game, like,
is oh
it,
absolutely, yeah.
I know we've been using the word immersion a lot for this podcast, but that's really the best way to describe what we were trying to discuss with this, because yes, video game music is memorable, and we did go off on probably more tangents than we wanted to about our favorite songs and why we like them, but at the same time, we did also bring it back into the reason why it made the game better.
Absolutely,
not just the
yeah.
fact it had good music, but because there are some games where the songs could be good, but the gameplay is atrocious, and it doesn't work well with each other. All the things that we mentioned, like when I mentioned the Journey soundtrack, it's not only is it just an outstanding soundtrack by itself, but it works with the game so well because the game's visuals, like, when you hear that music, even if you've never played the game, you could picture, like, that's what you would picture.
Exactly.
And so the game, they had to have worked with the composer as the composer was composing it, as Austin Wintory was composing it, as the designers were designing, because they mesh so perfectly. Like, I can't describe, like, it may not be my favorite soundtrack. Like I said, next week's going to be our favorite soundtracks. I can't think of a game, though, that the soundtrack meshed so well with it. That's the only game I can think of that it, like, it's 100%, 150%. Like, it's just so well meshed.
Nice.
I could not praise that enough.
Yeah, and it kind of make another comparison to movies. Like, first one that came to my head, Lord of the Rings. Could you imagine that movie, and I do this all the time with, like, musicals and stuff like that, because I find it hilarious, but could you imagine that movie soundtrack as heavy metal? Like, a heavy metal band playing as they're journeying through,
Well, depending on how it's written, maybe.
Right, but you wouldn't imagine, like, a old wizard, elf, you know, all of them, like, traveling.
I don't know. Christopher Lee, I mean, he didn't play Gandalf, but Christopher Lee did come out with a heavy metal song this year. He has two heavy metal albums that came out in the past 5 years.
That is pretty awesome.
That's nuts, isn't it? Christopher Lee's like 92 years old.
More power to him.
Want to hear another fun fact? He witnessed the last public hanging in France.
Wow.
Is that crazy?
That dude's old.
He is old. No, it's even crazier. This is way off topic, sorry. The last hanging done by the French, I think any government, I should say first world government, I don't know about...
Well, this podcast took a really dark turn.
Was right after the Star Wars movie premiere in France.
Huh.
Maybe it was only France then. Maybe the France's last hanging was... It wasn't public. It was just like how we do lethal injection, but... more horrible, was right, like, in the, like, 1976 or whatever year Star Wars came out. I think it was 76. So it was shortly after that movie was released.
Well.
Isn't that crazy?
On that bombshell.
I know, it was way off topic, but, okay, so yes, back to video game music and immersion.
Yeah, I think, you know... Like I said, the latest example I've seen, and it's only because I've been playing through the 13 series. I'm on 13.3 now. It, you know, it's they are really mood builders. You really need to get, like Josh said with Journey, you need to get the composers and the developers on the same page.
They if you wanted to be that magical.
Because they need to see the artwork, the composer needs to visualize it.
And in like modern game, in other games, longer games, defenses, like Journey is a 2-hour game.
Mm.
That's a lot easier to do on a 2-hour game than it is to do on, say, like an RPG, which is a 30 to 80 hour game, or 100 hour game, depending on how crazy the developer is.
Yeah, because you know, now with being able to just do recordings and things like that and having full orchestras, people expect more. They don't want to hear the same music over and over again, the same battle theme over and over again. Like, they could get away with it.
Well, RPGs. Games are also more complex now.
Exactly.
It's not just running to the right and shooting. It's now we have to, now it's full 3D. It's running in all directions, all 360 spectrum, a pure sphere of directions.
Exactly. And well, you know, that reminds me too, you look at Mega Man 9 and 10, Capcom purposely went back to the old formula for their music because they knew nothing else would fit that game.
No, it really wouldn't.
Even though it's made in the new gen era.
Heck, when they did DuckTales Remastered, that came out on all the modern gen stuff, they modernized the themes, but they're not nearly as good as, like, oh, I shouldn't say that. I should say the arrangements aren't that good. I've heard really good orchestral arrangements of, like, the moon theme from DuckTales.
Yeah, I was
going to
say the moon
theme
for sure.
Or, like, even just the main theme. So, I mean, that one, it wasn't really necessarily because of the game. It was just poor. I think it wasn't. I just think the arrangements could have been better.
Yeah.
From what I played of it. But so, you got anything else left to say on this? I mean, we've been, we keep trying to, we've been circling the drain.
Yeah, pretty much. I really don't have much else to say. I would say the only other point to make is that, you know, music can
make or break.
Yeah, it can make or break a game, and it can actually define the game itself, especially for Nintendo, because, let's be honest, they do recycle their big ticket games
all the time.
And granted, they do a great job, otherwise they wouldn't keep doing it.
But it sells.
Yeah, but to me, probably the most notable is The Legend of Zelda. When I play a Legend of Zelda game, I know what the music's going to be like. I expect the music to carry on the same way, like, very, how you would say, like, not medieval time, but, like, it has that
Zelda
undertone.
Has a very majestic theme.
Yeah,
like, it's a very heroic sounding.
Yeah.
The
overworld theme from the very first Zelda.
Like, when you hear that, it's not only, like, you hear Zelda, but it's not just that, like, it's heroic sounding. You feel heroic by listening to it. You feel like you could imagine not just Link, you know, swinging his sword around or, like, riding off with Epona, but you could picture that to, like, I don't know, any major, like, movie or any major movie that has, you know, swords and, you know, like, more medieval theme to it, but, like, not even, I wouldn't say a modern soldier thing, that might be a little off place, but you know what I'm saying. Like, you can, it's a very heroic sounding song.
Right, or, like, I mean, honestly, as the creators intended to be yourself, because that's why Link never speaks in Zelda games, because they wanted you to portray your own self to the main character.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and like I said, when I play a Zelda game, I expect that kind of heroic music, or, you know, To the Forest Temple or Shadow Temple, very, like, mysterious, creepy music. Like, I expect that kind of music to come from a Zelda game now.
Mm-hmm. So, alright, well, that wraps it up for this one. I know, I feel like we kind of recycled a lot of points in the last, well, I mean, like, we covered a bunch of different ones, and the last, like, 15 minutes, we just kind of said the same thing.
And you dropped that horrible bombshell on us about,
I don't know what you're talking about, that was fascinating, so.
But
all right, guys, so that's it for this week. Next week we will be talking about what our favorite video game soundtrack is. So if you don't like us gushing about our favorite stuff, let us know in the comments. We'll make it a bit more interesting than just gushing.
Just listen to it anyway.
Listen. What else? So, all right, guys, see you next week.
Peace.
Bye.